think some other people will be coming because I still don't know what we have. One apology. How many apologies do we have? Okay. Okay, no, we'll do so. and we are having the apologies received from Honorable L.P. Barai. And then this is the second meeting when a number of people come late, but I think we are going to correct that together with the whips and see what needs to be done. But all the same, for this presentation, I think let us go on. And because it is very, very important for us and for the country. Coming from the State of the Nation debate, we have this briefing by the Parliamentary Research Unit with Joyce Dooley and Dr. Redwan Ismail. Assalamu alaikum. Head of Department, Faculty of Business, Cape Peninsula University of Technology, on analysis of the State of the Nation address. So they are going to give us the analysis from the speech of the President. And if you refer to the speech of the President, copies of which have been circulated, you will know that he has mentioned a lot around job creation and highlighted six areas, and one of them was tourism. Secondly, he says we cannot create jobs alone as government. That is another message that the President said. And then thirdly, talked about financial support, and then he talked about the funds, job funds, IDC, those types of things. He mentioned small business, and then agencies, merging agencies, that restructuring, innovation. And then he went on to look at specifically at the tourism sector, page 9 at the bottom, and then strengthening existing markets and exploring emerging economies like Brazil, India, and then hosting high-level sports gathering. So it's some of the mega events now coming in, and then mega conferences, there's mega events as well. And then the issue of furthering our potential, where he was looking at the visas, landing slots, and then the issue of cultural industries, and then he specified two in Cape Town, and then infrastructure development, where he says it enables us to expand access to basic services and to improve the quality of life. How do we, as Department of Tourism, influence the building of infrastructure in such a way that it develops tourism as well? It shouldn't go to mines only. It shouldn't go to manufacturing industries only. But it should also promote tourism. So we've got to have water in places, in attractions. There are areas that are short of electricity and housing as well. So this is after the speech, then we decided that we ought to have an analysis, which was part of our program. And here now we are. We are going to have that presentation from which we are going to ask questions, have discussions. And I think also it is a good prelude to the summit we shall be having later this month, that is the 28th of February, where and the second and the first of March. Having said that, I hand over then to Dr. Ishmael and Ms. Ndoli for a presentation, and then thereafter we shall ask questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings, honorable members. I think the Chairperson has already alluded to the number of things that were raised by the State of the Nation Address. The President really said a lot of things on job creation, meaning that the main driver of most of the programs that are supposed to be done this year should have a focus on job creation. In my presentation, I've identified the areas that have direct and indirect impact on tourism. And these areas range from the increasing of tourist access through the flexible visa requirements, the improvement of landing slots at foreign airports, the improvement of tourism infrastructure, the importance of public-private partnerships, the importance of the cultural sector, the role of the state-owned enterprises and development finance institutions, the support for small, medium, micro enterprises, and the introduction of the new growth path for meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. On the flexible visa requirements, I think we all know that South Africa is seen as a long-haul destination whereby a lot of people who really want to come and visit the country, the first thing that they look at the distance. Is it accessible? So that in itself makes it very difficult for people to consider South Africa as a tourist destination. So they look at that. And the processes of applying for visas and further exacerbate the problem. So hopefully, by employing flexible requirements on the visas, this would allow for people to sort of like not see South Africa to be an issue to come to South Africa, shouldn't be a problem in the arrangements and on and so forth. And this practice is common in other countries. In Canada last year, they also introduced the relaxation of the visa requirements between Canada and Saudi Arabia because Canada has got investments with Saudi Arabia and they've got trade agreements as well. And although the flexibility of the visa requirements is important in assisting in tourism, attract tourists in the country, it should also be done in a manner that does not create a platform for criminal activity. Like, for instance, last year, India reviewed the visa requirements for the U.S. because when they had an issue whereby a Pakistan-American went to India a couple of times to go and plan the attack on Mumbai as well. So the visa, flexibility of the visa requirements should be done in a way that it does not infringe the security of the country as well. Improved landing slots in foreign airports. I think what needs to be done in order to assist this initiative as well is it can be done, yes. Landing slots at foreign airports can be improved and all that, but it also needs to create that demand. And by creating that demand, we need to have our marketing that is targeted to certain areas where we target to improve the landing slots. And this means that our marketing should be very broad in the approach. They should mention the different things that are there to see in the country, and opportunities should be created for investment opportunities in foreign countries. The President also mentioned the issue of BRICS. I think those would be the countries that can be targeted in order to improve the trade relations as well, and thus creating that tourism demand for all this. And also, what could be used as part of creating demand is the bidding for international events. Currently, South Africa has bid for the Soccer World Cup that is successful, and they're bidding for the Olympics and different business conferences and all that. So I think that would also assist in creating the demand, but because it wouldn't assist for us to improve the slots, landing slots in foreign airports only to find out that the demand is not there. An improved tourism infrastructure. What I've seen when I was doing research is that the performance of the Expanded Public Works Program in the tourism department has been lacking. In the first quarter of last year, they had only used 8% of the budget of that particular program, and at the end of the second quarter, they've only utilized 21% of the budget of that particular program. So it means that in terms of implementation of the Expanded Public Works, which is actually supposed to advance the agenda of job creation, is not well underway, and it's quite troubling that that particular project, which has a lot of funding from the Treasury to execute this kind of project, has not taken off to a speedy start. So I think that is something that the committee needs to look at in order to push the department to say how far are they going and what are the projects and whatsoever. And also, the projects that are funded by the department, they need to be clearly defined, because it does not ask for the department to say that certain projects that they're doing, whereas the committee does not even know what are those projects, because we go to oversights and we find out that a certain projects that they are claimed to be under EPWP, they have not been finished, although some of them have been aborted as well. So I think it is critical for the committee to look at the number of projects, look at what are the projects, what are the job creation outcomes out of those particular projects. And the creation of tourism smart disadvantaged communities and towns in order to facilitate tourism infrastructure development. For instance, we have airports that are redundant in certain rural areas and rural urban areas. In Mthatha, for instance, the airports are not working because there isn't that much of a demand for people to go there. So there is a need to create that demand. There's a need to draw investors into particular areas so that they can contribute to infrastructure development. And one of the key elements that have been overlooked is the issue of transport infrastructure and road infrastructure that would lead to those particular areas. Because for people to have interest in investing in certain areas, the infrastructure should be there. So the government should also work into looking at these things that would facilitate rural development, thus creating jobs for people in those rural areas. The protection and conservation of heritage and cultural infrastructure, that is important as well. I think Honorable Krumbok was said a number of times that the statue at Pietermaritzburg has not been taken care of. Those are the kind of projects that need to be taken care of so that people have that will to go to those kind of places, because it doesn't assist for us to have infrastructure that is redundant, and it does not assist in tourism development or tourism growth. And also, I think another dimension which really needs to be looked at, currently the mining industry is booming and people want to mine everywhere. So the issue of protection of heritage sites, it should be something that the committee also advocates on, because the sustainability of tourism depends on those heritage sites being taken care of. The importance of public-private partnerships. The role of tourism enterprise in creating business linkages between small businesses and established businesses. In the annual report for 2009-2010, they said that a number of, I think it was 2,000 business linkages that were created. But now the committee, it's very critical for the committee to investigate as well. What are those business linkages that have been created? Because when you go to oversight, people speak a different tone about TEP. TEP apparently is not assisting people in creating those linkages, in making sure that they're assisted in terms of the programs that they wish to run, in marketing their products as well. And there are initiatives by Southern Sun in conjunction with the National Department of Tourism. Those kind of initiatives, I think they need to be embraced in a manner that most of the private sector people have that will to go into those kind of partnerships, so that they create they build a small businesses that are credible, that are viable, that grow to employ all these people that we're talking about. And I think the other thing that is important in the private partnerships, I think government needs to be able to create incentives that will put private sector to want to engage in such partnerships whereby they would willingly want to say, okay, let us help the small business because these are the incentives that I get. It works that way. The private sector would not want to engage in something that is also not beneficial to them. So we need to work in a way that we meet in the middle to say that this is what I'm bringing, this is what I'm bringing. I'm saying you must assist the small businesses, but this is what is the envisaged outcome. The importance of the cultural sector. The person spoke about the Jazz Festival. The Jazz Festival in Cape Town brings a whole lot of tourists, domestic tourists and international tourists. And that is also because of the way it is marketed. The marketing of the events of South Africa that happen in South Africa, whether in provinces or in what, is very critical because that then determines how the tourists are going to receive that particular thing. The number of events that happen in provinces that are not well marketed that could work very well for domestic tourism as well. For instance, in Limpopo right now, but at the end of this month, they're going to be having the Marula Festival. And honestly, I don't think I've seen it anywhere where it's advertised to say there's a Marula Festival, this is what's going to happen, and whatsoever. It's a bit quiet. The people who know about it because they've seen it before, but it's not like in-your-face kind of a thing that would want to prompt you to go and see it. You have the Mopani Festival as well. The Grahamstown Festival, Arts Festival, is doing well as well, but it also needs to be beefed up so that when these festivals, they actually aid for economic development in those particular areas where they are as well. The structured bidding of international cultural events. Right now, every city bids for whatever they want to bid for. The provinces bid for what they want to bid for. And remember last year when we went to Northern Cape, they bid for the Maloof Money Cup and the supersonic, Bloodhound supersonic car. But it creates, at a certain point, it creates that friction between the national department and provincial department. So my suggestion would be that if there's a structured way of bidding for these international events, it would assist in also identifying the areas that need development. So some of the things might be channeled that way, your Maloof Money Cup, so that even the promotion of those events when the bid has been won is done countrywide, is not done by the province alone, and it does not remain the matter of the province to promote it alone. And the importance of historical monuments, I think I've spoken about that already. The role of state-owned enterprises and development finance institutions. I think we spoke about TETA a number of times. When we went to Bloemfontein, we found out that people are struggling to get training from TETA, even though they contribute the 1% of what. So those are the kind of things that we need to push as a committee to say, I mean, yes, businesses are contributing a certain percentage, but what are the outcomes in terms of training? People are not trained. What are the skills that are needed out there? Has TETA identified what are the skills that are needed in the industry so that the training is in line with that as well? And the internships, the in-job training of tourism graduates, the number of tourism graduates who are finished who have no work at all. What are the mechanisms to get them absorbed into the system so that they learn the trade and they can be able to move into entrepreneurship as well or else work for particular companies that are already established? The funding for new businesses and expansion of existing businesses. It's been a very, very, very exhausting exercise to get businesses funded. It's something that never happens. And now and again, we're told about the viability of and the marketability of that particular job. And I think it is important that the support and the funding of these SMEs does not only end at a person looking at the business plan and saying, no, it's not viable. It should go beyond that. It should, okay, fine, the business is not viable because according to my understanding, there's no business that's not viable. But it depends on what is the approach on that particular business. How do you plan to assist this person to have a marketable and viable business idea at the end of the day? So I think we should also move into that direction whereby people who have business ideas, but in paper they don't look that good, they're assisted to put their business plans in a way that they end up being viable. the linkages between established businesses and SMEs, I think I've spoken about that as well. The support of small businesses and medium micro enterprises. I think the envisaged measures of the three enterprises, Kula Enterprise, South Africa, Microfinance, Apex Fund, and the IDC, I think that would also be very beneficial to the cause of the fact that we complain every day about the funding of SMEs. Currently, you find out that the businesses are not getting funding anyway, but the businesses that get funding from Kula, from IDC, and from the Apex Fund, because all these institutions are in different places, so there's no common structure where they all report to. So people get these corrupt tendencies of applying for funding everywhere and end up not having that business prospering and whatsoever, whereas the people who really need to use that money and they don't have that opportunity to have that money because other businesses have been funded. New market incentives and exposure. In the Northern Cape, when we went to the Northern Cape, a lot of people were into the bed and breakfast business, were into the hunting business in the tourism sector. But it is very critical that different areas where people can develop businesses. So it is critical that new markets are sort of like advertised or they're exposed so that people have interest in new markets. Because people, when they speak tourism, they speak bed and breakfast. It's not only that. It's for people to see what are other markets that they can engage in so that we don't have this saturation of certain fields and then you end up having a whole lot of competition and people's businesses not prospering. The president also spoke about the 30-day turnover for small business and said as well underway. Yes, it is, probably in national department. But in the provincial structures, there's still an issue. There's still a problem. People are still experiencing problems whereby the invoices are not paid in time and all that. And I think that is something that needs to be looked at. That's why we speak of the issue of the alignment between the different spheres of government and as well as the intergovernmental relations. And I think in the other oversight trips that we've went to, we've seen that the lack of SMEs organizing themselves is also an impediment in itself, in fact, by the fact that they don't have a structured way of saying what their challenges are, saying what they're faced with, how do they approach the certain department. So to advocate for people to be organized in certain areas would also be beneficial for the people as well as for the country, because once they're organized, then you know you're dealing with a certain group of people in a particular area than dealing with each and every business coming in and out, say, oh, my business is not doing well, I've got an issue of funding. So, because most of these problems are related. You have five SMEs having one issue, which is funding. So if they're organized, then they speak in one tone, they're speaking funding. The introduction of the new growth path. Promotion and support of entrepreneurship. I've spoken about the environments, conducive environments for this to happen. The new growth path also speaks about the development in urban areas, which is something that I've got some sort of a problem with. It speaks about the trickling down system. It still dwells mostly on the trickling down system, whereby development will happen in urban areas, but not in rural areas. But the benefits of what happens in the urban areas would be channeled to the rural areas. It has not worked before. I don't think it's going to work now, because for development to be, for people to feel the benefits of development, it should happen around the areas where they are. Developing cities have been developing, the economy has been growing, but there's not been job creation. That's what the president was speaking about. There's no job creation. There are no jobs. Unemployment rates stay the same, but the economy grows. So there's a problem there. It means that trickling down effect system is not working. The provision and maintenance of road infrastructure, I spoke about it. It's a tool that we can be used in order to facilitate rural development. Quality assurance of tourism products. The grading council spoke about the quality of the businesses in terms of the accommodation sector. There's a need for people to feel, to have that initiative to grade their establishments. Because when they grade establishments, it also improves the quality of the accommodation in the country. Now, people know that when I go to a B&B and it says 5-star, yes, it is 5-star, and it's been graded by the grading council. There's a need for government as well to stand by that commitment of because you have government departments that go to certain areas that are not graded. But as well, the other thing is we need to look at whether there's no conflict between the grading of establishments and government using graded establishments vis-a-vis the other transformation efforts of SMME, of the BEE charter and what is it, the financial, the PFMA. Implications of Parliament. The Ministry does monitoring of tourism-linked infrastructure development through the Expanded Public Works Program, constant engagements with the Department of Tourism with regard to cultural tourism. There's a need for the committee to monitor the different programs pioneered by the Department to attract investors for infrastructure development in rural areas. Parliament needs to oversee that there is alignment in the promotion of events which take place in the different provinces. There's a need to oversee that the different provinces also adhere to the set day payment period. Constant advocacy for rural tourism marketing and development, advocacy for increased budget for the Department of Tourism. I think that is very critical as well, because all these new programs that we're speaking about, they need to be funded. The budget of the tourism department is little even now. So there's a need for the committee as well to keep on advocating for increased budget. Parliament needs to continue to engage with the Department of on the protection and conservation of the site or that of tourism significance. There's a need to have an ongoing review and dialogue with the key stakeholders about creating a business environment that encourages entrepreneurship. There's a need to engage with the Department of Home Affairs in order to assess the possibility of visa requirement realization where necessary, and what are those countries that will be targeted for that. And the progress on issues that have been raised in the 2010 State of the Nation Address. The World Cup infrastructure, I think we all know that was finished, and it was state-of-the-art infrastructure. We just need to build on to that. The perceptions about crime. Last year we had serious issues about crime, whether it was going to happen, crime was going to be an issue for tourists who are coming into the country. Yes, a lot of people didn't want to come to the country because of crime. And it's not only perceptions, it was crime as well. But I think the government, they're working on that. But and the other thing that was more positive was that research done by, I think, Deloitte indicated that a lot of people came into the country. When they went back, they had changed their perception about crime in South Africa. And they had a different view of what of the crime in South Africa. So they would actually suggest South Africa to a number of people. So that means that about 300,000 people would be ambassadors for South Africa. When people start saying, no, there's crime in South Africa, they'll say, yes, we went there, and there's crime in South Africa, but a lot has changed. I mean, when you go there and see that place face-to-face, you get a different perspective. Expanding Public Works Program, I've spoken about that. There's no movement. There needs to be a push. Projects are abandoned. They need to be finished. SMME development, the issue of funding, support, training. Training is still an issue that still needs to be looked at, because the training institutions are not doing well. And I think the other thing that is not really being done is to identify the skills shortage in the country, and also in, collaborate with the different universities, collaborate with the different technicons and FET college, so that they produce that particular workforce. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Ms. Nduli, and over to you, Dr. Ismail.
Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Minister Gumede, and greetings to everyone this morning. It gives me great pleasure, and it is really an honor to be addressing the congregation with the meeting here this morning. And I feel honored in addressing everybody and sharing some of my thoughts on the State of the Nation Address. Basically, the presentation will look at an overview of the 2011 State of the Nation Address relating specifically to tourism. Since 2011 has been declared the year of job creation, the presentation will look at some of or some recommendations to the Department of Tourism how it can actually achieve that objective. The presentation also looks at identifying key partnership initiatives in order to boost tourism within the to boost job creation within the tourism industry. And very importantly is marketing. How do we market this idea of job creation? And then finally, to identify the impact of the State of the Nation Address on the Tourism Portfolio Committee. As an introduction, just to give an idea where I come from, I'm currently the Acting HOD for Strategic Projects and Initiatives at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. And basically what I'm responsible for is establishing partnerships, strategic partnerships with institutions all over the world, responsible for research collaboration, staff-student exchange, and that's basically my role. I've been the acting head of department for tourism and events management for a period of about 3 years, and I've completed a doctoral study with the title Development of a Normative Model for Cultural Tourism on the Cape Flats. And Bongi mentioned earlier on about the importance of culture and cultural tourism. The theme, Parliament's theme for 2011, and this information I took from the website, it is to celebrate the legacy of freedom through strengthening the link between Parliament and the people. And I think today Parliament has indeed committed itself to making itself accessible to the SA public by creating opportunities like today for myself to be speaking to you for meaningful involvement and participation. The question is, why is the State of the Nation Address so important? Firstly, it highlights government's achievements and challenges. It also maps the year ahead for us. It holds government accountable to Parliament and the public, and the State of the Nation Address is also all about nation building. Now, the next few slides will look at an overview of the State of the Nation Address, and we're all familiar with it. We've read through the documentation. But just to ensure that we're all on the same page, so I'm just going to, briefly mention them. The President mentioned or identified tourism as a priority area, and the priority area is to create jobs. That's the bottom line. And when we say create jobs, I would like to see sustainable jobs as well, not seasonal. We need to work with business, labor, and community, and that is what the paper or the speech identified. And then the question is, how can the Department of Tourism play its part in creating jobs? And I have a few slides to answer that question as well. 9 billion rand have been set aside for job creation initiatives. The small business sector, the idea is to create job opportunities. There is also the financial support for the SMMEs, and the statistic that we know, 16 tourists create one job. My question is it permanent? And the research can answer that. And then looking at the growth of tourism in emerging economies. The paper also identifies South Africa as a conference and meeting destination, and it is happening. And for the period 2010 to 2016, already 95 meetings have been secured. And I think that bodes very well. Then there is also the contribution to the GDP that conferences contribute. Then with conferences, there is the job opportunities that exist. And then we spoke about hosting of sporting events. That is also going to be real big. And we need to target that as well as an opportunity to create jobs. Then the paper also speaks about boosting tourism potential by improving tourism infrastructure. And the previous speaker mentioned that as well. And then develop cultural industry sector. And in brackets, I put there under one roof. Maybe at this point, I just want to share something. When I go home in the evening, I see this gentleman standing and selling these little aeroplanes, but he is selling it to local people like ourselves. And I think to myself, this man is standing on the wrong place. And the idea or the dream I have is, can't we have a warehouse close to the airport where all these little crafters, individual crafters, can be offered a 2 by 2 meters, you know, facility or space, and they can market their goods there. We need to be at the right place. That's the important thing. So when your tourists come and go from the airport, that is where tour operators play a role by bringing these tourists to one facility, and you have everything under one roof. Continuing with the overview of the State of the Nation address, direct more resources to small businesses by merging Kula, SA Microfinance Apex Fund, and the IBC. It is important that that be streamlined so that we can avoid people applying for funding at all these different institutions. Now, we know that 2011 has been declared a year of job creation through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. Now, I've taken the following information from the website southafrica.smetoolkit.org. And the information, or the stat here, is very, you know, striking. It says that 8 out of 10 new businesses in South Africa fail. And the reason for that that they've identified is that the businesses are identified for the wrong reason. So people who are in debt, they then decide, I'm going to create or start a business, apply for funding, and that also becomes a failure. And that's the reason why, according to this website, 8 out of 10 businesses fail. But I'd like to focus on the second point, where it says, opportunity entrepreneurship aimed at identifying and seeing the opportunity to establish a growing business that creates employment for others. And that should be the motive. You start an initiative with the idea of creating opportunities for others. And this is the category we require more in South Africa. Excuse me. Just on that point, if I can just share an initiative that I'm currently busy with. I'm currently researching information on the history, art, culture, buildings, that's to be found in Cape Town, the CBD area, looking at the Boer Kaap area as a cultural attraction, and also the waterfront as a development initiative, and also the gardens. So looking at those four areas, the idea is to develop a self-guided walking tour where the tourists will buy an MP3 player with all the information on, with a headphone and a map. So I, as an entrepreneur, I put that together. I then get other people to sell that to tourists. So I can create at least 10 job opportunities. So it's going to be people with the least minimal of qualification or education. They need to be taught how to approach somebody, how to sell a product. They got to go for those for that kind of training. But they don't have to create that tool, okay, or that product. And that is, you know, what we need to encourage. And that is what more people should try and do. Giving effect to government's call for job creation, how can government or the Department of Tourism play its part in creating jobs? Now, remember, I come from an academic background, and so my focus will be in that regard. I'm looking at experiential training, internships, and mentoring. We have so many graduates, and they always complain, we can't find work. But these are graduates with master's qualification, a BTEC qualification. We don't expect those individuals to be standing at the door of a hotel to open and close the door. We need to honor them. Really, they've sacrificed 4 or 5 years. And the education, we need to respect that. And I think this is where government can also come in and offer that kind of internships, where they can go into various departments. And at CPUT, I can speak of CPUT, but there are many other UOTs in the country. But with CPUT, if you offer an internship, you don't have to pay them a salary. All right? You pay a stipend, But the important thing is the student will get that experience and exposure. And I think that is what we need to create. We speak about infrastructure development. We need to identify where in the country we can develop infrastructure. And with infrastructure development, naturally, jobs will be created. Tourists will come and visit. And that is how, you know, the cookie crumbles, using a saying. We talk about networking, big business, and SMMEs. Let me share with you, 2 weeks ago, I was invited to a business breakfast where Calvin Gilfillan from CTRU and the Cullinan Hotel, they hosted the business breakfast. And there were over 20 small SMMEs. And each one of us had to then talk about what we're doing. But do you know what the benefit was of that meeting for myself? I met 20 new small businesses. We shared information. We shared our contact details. And that is networking. And that is so important. But who created that opportunity for us? It was the Cullinan Hotel and CTRU. Now, as an individual, I cannot afford to invite 20 people, let's go to a hotel and, you know, have a breakfast meeting. And this is how big businesses can play a role to support small businesses. Partnerships with Department of Tourism and tertiary institutions, I think this needs to be initiated, where the Department of Tourism, in partnership with institutions all over the country, they can look at various objectives that they want to achieve. It can be research, collaboration, sponsoring of an event or a conference. But in the following slide, I'll talk in more detail about that. When we look at the research collaboration, we have BTEC students. This is now fourth year tourism students. As part of the curriculum, they have to undertake a research project. Now, the students will come to me as a lecturer and say, "Sir, what can we research on?" And then I give them the guidance how to go about it. But if we have that collaboration with government can guide us and say, "These are the areas that we're looking at." And I am saying to you, that kind of research is free of charge. The student needs to complete the research in order to graduate. All right? And believe me, they get the sound guidance from the lecturers, qualified lecturers, that will guide them into completing that project. And we don't want that project to end there. We also want the Department of Tourism to sponsor a conference. And if UOTs around the country that offer tourism as a subject, we all get together over a weekend or whatever it is and say, let the students present their findings. And we invite everybody. And I think that will be very, very effective. It boosts the confidence of the student, all right? It also provides knowledge that is being researched. It's not no thumb-sucking, all right? And it's also, showing that the Department of Tourism is also involved as well. I've got a point there on brain drain. A few years ago, and we still have it, but not on a big scale, we had so many medical doctors leaving the country. Now, I foresee a situation where many master students, because they become frustrated, there's no work for them, they leave the country. And the fortunate thing about being a tourism graduate is that you can find work anywhere in the world. There's no shortage of it. Now, we cannot lose them. Going on to the next slide, talking about developing tourism infrastructure. I've just used this as an example, but it can happen anywhere in the country. And when we talk about tourism infrastructure on the Cape Flats, promoting cultural tourism. Now, for many people, they think when you speak Cape Flats, gangsterism, drugs, all the negative things. But I can assure you, if I take you on a tour of the Cape Flats, your perception will change. There are many good things happening out there. There are things happening out there that you will not find in any part of the country. For example, snook. All right? Smoked snook. I can take you to a family who does the whole process. And tourists, believe me, they will enjoy that. To see the whole process taking place, taking part, eating of it. And you could get tourists that are business people that will say, please export this product to where we are. And these are the kind of opportunities that exist. To develop a cultural route for the Cape Flats, we have many interesting history. Although we don't have a museum on the Cape Flats, but these things can be developed. All right, we have churches, we have mosques. There are interesting people, people that have contributed. These are the people that need to be interviewed. Food, we have the best food, and this is what tourists also want. To share in that cuisine. What about the idea of having a convention center and a hotel on the Cape Flats? It will create jobs for the people within that area. People don't have to travel from the Cape Flats, spending 20, 30 rand on a taxi to get to work and back. And then at the end of the day, their salary, half of it is gone in terms of transport. Encourage SMEs to supply tourism businesses their services or products. Here again, organizations responsible for providing funding to SMEs. Another way of doing it is to, you know, sometimes as an entrepreneur, you want to do everything yourself. You want to start the business, you feel good, now I'm a business owner, and you want to buy your vehicle, or your office, and you buy the computer and everything else, and then you find, I don't have any money left. I don't have the necessary skills. We should encourage these entrepreneurs, the product or the service that you're offering, supply that to the big business people. See if they will use it or buy it from you. And let that be the start. And if you find it's working well for you, then you can start your own business. But some of us, you know, we just take a plunge and then we realize 2 years later it's not working for us. There's also the opportunity to identify or develop niche tourism offerings. And this is something we need to hone in and focus on. When tourists come to a country, they want to experience something different, something unique, something that they will not experience anywhere else in the world but in South Africa. And if we can put a range of these unique tourism offerings, and we market it correctly, I think we will be able to attract many more people. When we attract tourists, remember, for every 16 tourists, we're creating a job. The opportunity for site guides. Now, the previous speaker mentioned, spoke about Tita. Now, if Tita can't, you know, accommodate all the requests to offer these programs, come to CPUT as an example. We can offer these programs. It's all accredited. And, you know, it creates work for our lecturers as well. It also affords the institution a third stream income. And I think that's also important for us as well. Now, the importance of site guides, when we register as a guide, we become a guide of the Western Cape. We're supposed to know everything. Now, as a registered tourist guide, I can tell you I don't know everything. All right? But as you go along, you develop, you learn, you research, and you become better at it. But the idea would be where you have site guides. If you have somebody standing at a museum or a tourist attraction, you have a tourist guide taking people around, but when they get to that particular site, you hand over to the site guide. And if you look at, if you have 200 museums and, you know, et cetera, attractions, you're creating more work. And you can't have one site guys, you'll need 3-4 people. And so you'll be creating more work. Walking guides. If you walk in town today, I mean, I see this all the time. I see tourists with map books and maps, and they look all lost. And I think to myself, if I had this time, I would tell them, let me take you around. Put that away, I'll take you around. Let's have more of these walking guides that can take these people around, and believe me, tourists will appreciate that more. They want to be with the locals. They want to hear the language, how you speak. They learn about your culture, the food that you eat. That's important. You see, Table Mountain is there. You can take a postcard and say, oh, that's Table Mountain. But that experience that you've had with that person that you've walked with, the jokes that you share, the experiences that you have, that is what the tourists will take with. And they'll always speak about it. Another important aspect is the events, meeting, conferences. This also is another opportunity to create work. And again, with event planners, the organizers, the Department of Tourism need to, you know, speak to the role players and say, how can we create more work? Another opportunity, and this is definitely lacking, is having tourism info offices. Now, I've mentioned the India, the Middle East, Far East, South Africa. Let's start South Africa first. We must have tourism info centers, like we have these corner cafes. We must encourage local people to travel anywhere in South Africa. The day when foreign tourists don't come to the country for whatever reason, at least people in the industry won't die because there's no work. So we shouldn't depend only on the one source of income. We should develop both. That is local tourism, encouraging local people to travel, as well as foreign tourists. Tourism Business Council of South Africa, they've got a beautiful funding program, you know, a handbook loaded with information where you can get funding. And this is the kind of information that we require. It should be readily available. That's important. Incentive schemes and financing, the DTI, the previous speaker also mentioned that. I'm also looking at, for example, the rickshaw. We see these little cyclists, you know, it's yellow in color, and the guy pedals. So it is for people that want to get from point A to B. Let's get a guide on there. And if you're going to go from point A to B, even if it is a local person, tell them about the importance of this building. Did you know that that is a slave lodge? Did you know that opposite the slave lodge, that used to be the first hospital? You know, that type of thing. And local people, we don't know everything. And that is how we can share the information and make them aware as well. Collaborate with tourism role players. We need to tell the role players, tourism role players, it's your responsibility. It is a national priority. How can we create or offer employment opportunities? And if we put all our heads together, we will be able to come up with solutions. Tourism summit, you can have any other word. It can be a conference, get together. The idea is, how can tourism businesses assist with job creation? And the role players, they need to tell the Department of Tourism, yes, we can assist, and this is how we will do it. And I don't like, or I would stay clear of the idea of providing incentives for big businesses. That is not, you know, it's for example, in the community where I'm from, they'll sell you a eat and treat ticket. It's considered a donation, but you attend the function and you get a nice plate of food. Now my philosophy is, if you give a donation, don't expect anything in return. And so for big businesses as well, they shouldn't expect an incentive. This should be seen as their responsibility. It's a national priority, and we all have to put our shoulders to the wheel in order to achieve this. We also have the Department of Tourism and Department of Education. There again, I see a collaboration, introducing tourism as a subject. There are many schools that offer tourism at high school level, but I would like to see tourism being offered at each and every high school. You are going to create employment opportunities for existing teachers that's in the system. For example, you take a geography history teacher, you deploy them to that new department, tourism, you create the HOD and two other staff members, and then you create a vacancy for three other staff members, and that will have to be filled. But what have you done? You've created three positions. And if we have 1,000 high schools in the country, it is 3,000 jobs. And as I'm sitting here, I'm just thinking the idea that when the next set of the nation address is being delivered, I'd like to hear the president reading out and saying that the department that really stood out in creating jobs was the Department of Tourism. We hope to achieve that. Cruise tourism. We might lack the facility, but there is great opportunity. If you have a cruise ship coming in, it is 2,000 guests. Let's not get the big business players to come with their coaches and they load up 40 people at a time. We should restrict that. We should, no. Per couple, you have one guide. You're going to create 100, 200 job opportunities. And if we can do that on an ongoing basis, and we, market it adequately, tourists or the cruise ships will definitely anchor here at the Cape. Medical tourism, it's also very big, although we don't market it as such. But the opportunity exists where we can market it and say we have the best doctors and surgeons that will do the necessary operation. But to recuperate, we have this lovely place for you on the West Coast. What are we doing? We're creating job opportunities. We're promoting the West Coast. Doesn't have to be the West Coast. It can be the Garden Route, anywhere else. But the idea is that we create these job opportunities. Accessibility tourism. This is people with, people that that's challenged, physically challenged. There is great opportunity for this kind of tourism because we lack the infrastructure. That is why we can't host these huge conferences where people with accessibility issues, from other parts of the world, the first question they ask, how many hotels do you have that can accommodate us? How many B&Bs? And if I can go back to a research that was done by one of my BTEC students, and what they found was that many B&Bs, the majority of them, could not cater for people in wheelchairs. And they found that it was too expensive to make the necessary renovations, and how many people will they attract. The next slide talks about partnerships, Department of Tourism and tertiary institutions. The first point there, before I elaborate, just to take a sip. We talk about transforming the tourism industry. Now, this is how I see transformation taking place. Remember, I come from an education academic background. I see the transformation taking place over a period of 30 years. We actively encourage people to study, to educate themselves, to achieve the masters and their doctorates in tourism. And they come into the system. They take over businesses. They start businesses. And they start from the bottom. And eventually, over a 30, 40-year period, the people in top positions will be people with qualifications. They will know about the white paper. They will know about the Department of Tourism's initiatives, government's initiatives, and it becomes so much easier because they've been infused with that knowledge and information. Now, we also need to understand the role of the UOT, University of Technologies, in tourism compared to the role of FET colleges and private tourism colleges. The UOTs basically provide a qualification, be it the national diploma, a BTEC, MTEC, or DTEC. And I see those graduates taking up managerial positions within the tourism industry. And the role of the FET and private tourism colleges, they provide or they issue certificates. And that will be your workforce, the people starting off at the bottom, and they have the opportunity to work themselves up the ladder. The suggestion is that the Department of Tourism host a tourism conference with students from institutions, from UOTs, FET colleges, and you'll be amazed the kind of information that can be generated from there. I don't know if this is possible, but the idea is to make funding, research funding available. We do get funding from NRF, okay, but there are certain criteria and conditions attached. But I think if the Department of Tourism can make funding available and they use the tourism conference where they, you know, going to issue these funding and make it known, I think it will bode well. The Department of Tourism collaborate with tourism industry stakeholders to promote skills development of its workforce. We have so many people working in the industry, and I always tell my students, as a tourism student, you only need two skills. The one is you must be able to smile, because that is what tourists want, okay? And secondly, you must be able to be prepared to work 24/7. If you don't have those two qualities, you don't belong. You cannot be a tourism student. Because many of our youngsters, you know, they believe weekends, it's their time, it's time to party, etc. But the tourism industry is a totally different ballgame altogether. Now, promoting skills development of its workforce. Now, here, institutions, tertiary institutions, the university knowledge, they have the facilities, they have the ability to offer initiatives, to offer programs, to offer training programs to train and upskill the workforce. It can be done. We need to talk to tourism industry associations, examples, your FEDASA and every other association. Get buy-in from them. How can they promote their members to, you know, to buy into the job creation initiative, as well as upskilling their staff members? The next point: national heritage route. Celebrate icons who contributed to the liberation struggle. Currently, we have Desmond Tutu, that is going around. You know, there's a program taking place or being screened on TV on a Tuesday, where Desmond Tutu goes around the country and he promotes the attractions that we have in the country, meeting people, talking to them, etc. We need tourism icons that will go around the country and promote various attractions. Another important aspect is marketing. How do we market the idea of job creation? We need to use, or the Department of Tourism need to use, the platform of some of the associations mentioned below to promote the national priority of job creation through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. Now, there I have Indaba. We know Indaba takes place in May, but my idea of it is to have Indaba twice a year. To have it in March, where we get all the role players together and we say we're going to put together programs for winter. Because everybody says winter, well, business is down and we need to prepare for that. And then in September we have another Indaba and we prepare for summer. And these are the forums that we need to use in order to promote and to market the idea of job creation. Meetings Africa that will take place in February. You have the Saki that will take place in July. Sport event tourism in July. So there are many other platforms that can be used in order to promote and to market this idea of job creation. having a mobile tourism office, and this mobile office should undertake and conduct research. Find out from the people, from the industry, what is it that you need, what is lacking, and you know, create a develop a report, and a report back needs to be provided. I've spoken about this earlier on, tourism icons. You know, we need to identify who the tourism icons are, let them travel around the country, document it, and play it on TV. And the program that we're familiar with is Short Lift, okay, very effective program that was on TV. It created awareness of what we have in the country, and local people traveled around. And that is what we need to resuscitate as well. 2011 State of the Nation Address, the Impact on Tourism Portfolio Committee. I'm almost at the end. Firstly, to actively engage with tourism stakeholders by having committee briefings, oversight visits to tourism initiatives and projects. And I'm sure that is being done already. Monitor government's adherence to the call of job creation through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. Scrutinize the budget, strategic plans, annual reports of the Department of Tourism to ensure compliance with government priorities and spending. Monitor programs and spending priorities of state-owned enterprises and development funding institutions such as IDC. And it should, you know, to ensure that these are aligned with job creation agenda. The Portfolio Committee need to lobby structures such as African Union, New Partnership for Africa's Development, Pan-African Parliament, SADC, and market the African continent at these forums. Next point, facilitate collaborative efforts between government, private sector, labor federations, and communities through having workshops, briefings, and public hearings. Assist in the transformation of the tourism sector to ensure that opportunities are created for all South African citizens to benefit from this growing sector of the economy. And as was mentioned earlier on, South Africa became the fifth member of the Brazil, Russia, India, and China group. In the summit that will take place in April, this is where the Department of Tourism should also be involved. Marketing. We're talking about marketing. Job creation should enhance youth development because that's going to be the next generation. The Department of Tourism and National Youth Development Agency and private sector should facilitate youth development in tourism programs and promote youth tourism enterprises. And when we speak about transforming the industry, the tourism industry, this is the route to go. In conclusion, during the FIFA World Cup, every South African united around the South African flag. That was a lesson for us. So whatever initiative we have, let's use the flag. And I'm concluding and saying job creation must be seen as a national priority. Let's unite around the South African flag. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ishwari. Perhaps before we ask questions and then make comments and then have discussions, I think it would be important to just have a short recap of the presentations. The first one was around increasing tourist access by having more flexible visa requirements without promoting criminal activity, improve landing slots at foreign airports, the improved tourism infrastructure, importance of public private partnerships, importance of the cultural sector, the role of state-owned enterprises and development finance, the support for SMMEs, the introduction of the new growth path for meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. how do people in tourism respond to those? That was, in short, the first presentation. The second presentation was around the fact that our priority as a country is job creation, and one of the major players should be tourism. And we should promote partnerships, and we've got to develop attractions like events to attract more people to tour South Africa, develop our infrastructure, particularly in disadvantaged areas, and therefore promote cultural industry. We should have a SMME toolkit for small businesses so that they promote themselves and have small businesses and promote the destination. Cape Flats cultural tourism, like having experiences of the western of the Cape Flats. He quoted the issue of smoked snook prepared in a special way. Unique tourism offering. How do you distinguish South Africa from the rest of the world in terms of tourism? That is by developing together the unique tourism offering. The issue of different types of guides, size grants, guides, walking guides, and so forth. Domestic tourism, the importance of domestic tourism, especially its sustainability, even when there are global threats like diseases and things like the ash that we had in London and so forth. How do we make sure in the realm of all those happenings that our businesses maintain and survive, that they can maintain themselves and survive. That each school should teach tourism, and then in one that could be one way of developing employment through government teaching in every school. And then we looked at the different forms of tourism as a way of expanding tourism, like cruise tourism, medical tourism, accessibility tourism, and the other types of tourism as a way of expansion. And then marketing job creation to stakeholders now in the tourism industry. How do we have a buy-in from the major stakeholders like FEDASA and other major role players? Where do we do that work, and where does that work get done, and whether the issue of a mobile office was proposed, and then tourism icons as a way of promoting tourism, and then the role of the committee in monitoring, and then some important areas of monitoring as a means of oversight in our work, and then the issue of youth. So this constitutes a number of areas where we've got to look into when we do our oversight and ask questions, and so as to see whether there is progress and whether we can optimize our potential as a country. Both of the presentations did not mention optimization of the 2010 FIFA World Cup, except to say that tourists were exposed to this country, and then they discovered that there was not as much crime as it is normally the thing they reported. But perhaps consciously, I think we've got to, at a later stage, or even at the Indaba, have more concentration on how we optimize on what we discovered through our staging the World Cup. For instance, the Blue Bulls discovered that there was Orlando Stadium. And then in the process of going to Orlando Stadium, their fans discovered that there was something they could enjoy in Soweto, culturally speaking. But that is not happening in Cape Town. It's not happening in Cape Town. Those types of things. So it's a whole host of things, but it is exciting. Both the presentations were exciting, but I think the engagement is going to be even more exciting. So over to you, honorable members.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd like to thank both the presenters for their presentations, which were, if nothing else, stimulating. But I do want to play devil's advocate for a moment, and if I can start with Dr. Ismail. As Dr. Ismail correctly pointed out, he is an academic at CPUT. Yeah, it really does show. And I don't mean that in an insulting way, but you come with a very different mindset when you are not actually an industry player yourself, but maybe lecture on the industry. And I just want to try and advance another perspective. I did enjoy his presentation, and I did find it interesting. But as we would expect from academia, it was very, very top-heavy on the role of government and surprisingly light on the role of the individual. So the good doctor spoke a lot about job creation, and when we got into that, it turned out we were talking about additional work for the lecturers, and we're talking about teachers and HOD and 3,000 jobs. In other words, talking about government jobs. Okay, that's what he said. And I know that's a job, and it's important, but I also would have thought that the government had an interest in not expanding its own bureaucracy, but in fact creating private sector jobs. Because if anything, one of the very rewarding things about our new democracy is that the present government has in fact recognized to a great extent it was practically possible before 1994 that the private sector does have a role to play. Now, Chair, you took us to Khayelitsha a couple of weeks ago, and I found that quite an uplifting experience. There were people that came to talk to us who were quite, they were very ambitious in the sense that they wanted to do something with their lives. They're obviously very proud of the area that they represented, all the things that Dr. Ismail was talking about. But you know what? None of those people are stupid. And one of the ladies there, she must have been in her 60s, just starting her own business, gave me what I thought was a very professional brochure advertising her B&B, and I promised to go and stay there. So I can also experience what it's like to stay in a B&B in Khayelitsha and go to a apostolic church on a Sunday morning and do the kind of things that you would do if you were a resident of Khayelitsha. I'm actually quite looking forward to broadening my experience in that way. And I said to myself, you know, there's nothing wrong with these people's ability or their capacity, but they need help. And I want to advance to this committee this morning that it's not necessary to do, or let's say it's not enough to do everything which Dr. Ismail presented us. There's a different kind of help that's needed as well. And I think some of the help that these people need is that actually government gets off their backs rather than has yet more summits and yet more people at more schools and coordinating things. So, give me one example. One of the things and the doctor mentioned that we should have a mindset to start the kind of business that will create jobs for other people. Now, in principle, there's nothing wrong with that, and it's a very admirable concept. It just doesn't exist in reality, because nobody that we met out in Khayelitsha a few weeks ago actually has as their final end the desire to create jobs for other people. That's not why they're in tourism. In fact, in reality, it doesn't just go to the tourist operators in Khayelitsha. It goes to the guy who owns his own taxi, and maybe he starts off with one taxi. It goes to the bloke who's selling fruit that he grows in his back garden on some dusty corner in a township in Mpopomeni, where I represent. They all have one primary end, and that is to put food on the table for themselves and for their families. If in the process their business grows and they end up employing other people, that is a welcome indirect benefit. But it's not why they went into business for the first place. They went into business to do something for themselves. So I think when we actually start off with that mindset and we encourage people, you are in it not for yourself but for the good of other people, it's a very socialist concept, and that still has some currency in this country. But it's not what gets people out of bed in the morning. And so people don't get out of bed in the morning for that reason. And in fact, they don't start a business and employ people, and let's be absolutely frank here, because they're scared to. Because if you employ someone, the labor laws will crush you. And that is why there's been a debate for years and years and years about the labor laws. President Mbeki, in one of his late, near to the end of his term of office out of SONA, spoke about lifting many of the labor laws which restrict our people and prevent them and disincentivize them from starting their businesses. Now, tourism is a people-centered business. There's no doubt about it. It's a people-centered business. It's not huge in the way of capital startup, but you do need to work with people. And if we are, in fact, talking about creating thousands of micro-jobs, because many of these are micro-jobs and very small, one of the first things you've got to do is actually make it easier for people to employ other people. Then you'll get the benefits that the good doctor speaks about, but then you've got to start from a different mindset. So that's just one of the points I wanted to make. I like his views on that. And, I mean, I think one of the problems we have in the committee is that we have people to study who the industry and talk to us about it, but we don't always have people actually are at the coalface, right? And I say it with respect to the doctor. I mean, I'd like to know, have you actually run your own tourism business before, or is there any business background, or have you always been in the teaching profession or lecturing, or now as a doctorate head of department? I think that's the perspective that we lack. Now, to go back to our first presenter, you know, there's a very good advert on TV at the moment that says, it's about AIDS, and it says an HIV generation starts with you. HIV-free generation, sorry, starts with you. And it's a very compelling and it's a very empowering thing, because it says all of us have the power in our own hands to do something about HIV-AIDS. And if you take one of the reasons why people don't come to this country, it's because it's not clean. It's very simple. People come to Cape Town and many places in the Western Cape because it's seen as clean and efficient, and that is an attractive tourism attribute that exists in Cape Town. People don't go to Maritzburg where you and I come from chairperson because it's filthy. And I mean, you made that point yourself right at the beginning of the meeting. Now, that is why I agree with the doctor, and it links up to what our first presenter said. Imagine if we could get the education department to introduce, this will also be the doctor, some form of tourism, but we maybe call it life skills as part of the life skills course. If we instilled in our children, right through to school, an idea, a clean country starts with you. Mm-hmm. And we actually had children putting pressure on their parents. When dad is driving into school or driving him home from school, he's having a cool drink and he throws the thing out the car and says, hey, don't do that. It was my teacher told me in class today. Can you imagine how quickly we clean up this country? Draw in the taxi operators. It's terrible in Maritzburg. You're on Chief Langley Balele Street. You know what I'm talking about, chairperson. And you see the taxis drive down there, and as it stops at the red light, the window's open, and out it goes. You're laughing because you know it's true. Now, if we can, that is again another engagement, I think, where we can work together. If we can clean up our country, that's the kind of interdepartmental cooperation we need, because that's going to help us attract tourists. Two last points. All of these initiatives are good. There's nothing wrong with anything that's been said today. They all would help to some, you know, to a greater or less extent. The problem we have is we can't get people there in the first place to experience the kind of improvements that our presenters have been talking about. So yes, if they had the broader range of experiences, if they had intergovernmental support, if they had better trained people, everything that's been mentioned, it would help, and they'd have a better experience and they'd spread the word. But we can't get past first base because we can't get them here. And the reason why we can't get them here is because of you have said and I have said that the perception before they even think about buying a ticket to get onto a plane is the wrong perception. They still think this country isn't safe. When they hear about Togolese football players getting shot up in Cabinda, they think it's South Africa. I mean, we know this is a problem, right? And it's completely inappropriate. It's almost racist. Because you don't have people saying, I'm not going to go into the London Olympics because there's a bomb going off in Belfast in Northern Ireland. But when something happens in Africa, it's, oh, we're not going to South Africa. It's wrong. But that perception exists. The other thing is too expensive, which we know is not true. And I also think our people are not friendly, and we know our people are the friendliest in the world. And we can only change those perceptions if we put more money into marketing our country. And I'm glad Dr. Ismail mentioned that, and I think he did as well. But we've got to keep that on the front of our agenda in this committee, and we've got to lobby even harder, because we will never be able to bring about these improvements unless we can get the people in the first place, and that's the only thing that's going to change that. My last point here is just something that's been worrying me for a while now. You know, it was very ironic when we went to Khayelitsha, and we had all these tourism operators telling us about their problems. And it turned out that in many cases, none of them had actually even been aware of the facilities that FedHasa and the Department of Tourism had created for them during the World Cup, like the rooms for your portal, right? And I asked that question. People said, oh, well, we can't afford to advertise on a FIFA website. I mean, they didn't even know it was their own homegrown free website. So clearly their own controlling bodies aren't doing enough to communicate with them. So I spoke to some of the people in that lovely center that had been created, and they said, no, they sent up SMSs and 2 newsletters a month. Something's going wrong. But ironically, when having heard a lot of people who are very unhappy about tourism prospects in Cape Town and telling us how much we are struggling, in that very day in the Cape Town, that very day, there was a major article, I'm sure you read it, Chairperson, op-ed piece about how, despite this Diwali very unfortunate incident, they said it lasted for 2 weeks, the effect of tourism in the townships, and the township tourism was booming. Okay, so I thought, well, you know, there's something wrong here, because the Cape Towns are telling us that these guys are actually doing very well, and over that very unfortunate incident, and they've reestablished their businesses, and bookings are strong, and yet these guys are actually telling us things are bad. And then it hit me that, in fact, what it is, they are disengaged from their own local tourism controlling bodies, and they're not part of the success story that does in fact exist out there in many cases, simply because there isn't enough communication. And I think at a micro level, rather than trying to fix everything at national government, and I'll go back to where I started, maybe there is work to be done where people need to be proactive and take their fate into their own hands and say, well, let me engage with the people that represent me, whether it's Khayelitsha or the Cape Flats or wherever, and get into the program. Because there's no doubt that it is succeeding, but perhaps we don't trust our own people enough, and we underestimate them and don't encourage them to actually be a little bit more self-reliant when that would really help. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. In fact, my favorite advert is John Carney, when he walks, there's the NetBank Conservation District advert, when he walks with his lamp into a bush, and then tells his story about conservation. Yes, Mom Jo.
Yeah, thank you, Chief. I think I agree with most of the people that you said by Mr. Kumpo. I'm quite interested on the side, on the area of training. You speak of South Africa losing tourism graduates. How I wish you could have an idea of how many of these graduates, for instance, have been produced, let's say over a certain period of years, and how many we are losing, at what rate are we losing them. You know, I'm interested in this area because we have had the department come in here and we discuss, you know, the question of training in the area of tourism. And some of us have seen, you know, young people who are claiming to be studying tourism, but my concern has always been, is there any relevance between what these students are studying in the classroom, between that and the industry itself? We actually asked that because I just forget which people this with, but we actually asked a question as to whether the Department of Tourism does have any input, for instance, into the content of what is taught in the schools. And I also want to add now with you here at the higher level, tertiary level, because it does seem to me, at least this has been my impression all along, that there doesn't seem to be any direct, you know, coordination in terms of the content, so that when those students qualify at the end of their courses, what they have studied is relevant to the industry, and therefore we would expect that they should be able to get jobs within the industry of tourism. This has been quite a worrisome point for some of us. I would be happy if you can just elaborate on that, on, you know, the coordination and the collaboration between the educational institutions and the department itself in terms of the relevance of the content, so that when the students complete, they are useful people there. Another point, you see, which is of interest to me, is what you have raised about developing what you call cultural roots. You gave as an example the Cape Flats, that you could say develop a, you should develop a cultural root, and although there's quite a lot of negativity about the Cape Flats, but if actually we made it positive, this is possible, that actually people could go around the Cape Flats as tourists and actually their job. Yeah, I agree with you totally. And this also brings to me the point that has been raised here, the area that has been referred to here by Mr. Krumpop. When we went to this township, Langa, Kukuletu, and Khayelitsha, we found one of the things that the tourism activists complained about was the negative publicity that you see is being given to the areas, and therefore how this negative publicity is affecting tourism in those areas, that the tourists are kind of scared to go there because they think that, you know, immediately that they will experience crime. I'm just wondering if you could give us, you know, some advice also. What we are thinking about what could be done to improve such perceptions, like I have just said about these areas in particular. Now, you talk about the sight guides and walking guides, and that the university can offer, if I got you right, you can offer sight guides. And of course, your idea of the walking guides, I think I like that. But I think let's practicalize it. If we could practicalize it and say, for instance, let's say for the walking guide. Indeed, I've also, well, I mean, all of us, I'm sure we have seen tourists, you know, along Adderley Street and elsewhere here in Cape Town, trying to find places. And sometimes, you know, you're kind of scared for them, you fear for them, that they might ask the wrong people for directions, and maybe they can be taken advantage of. But what you are saying about walking guides, definitely this would be able to create jobs if it was possible. I'm just thinking of Cape Town alone, not other areas, and I'm sure in other areas it could even be more. But how do you practicalize this? In other words, you see, if you have these walking guides and the sight guides that you have suggested, obviously when people do something, they want to be paid for it, or if they want to gain something out of it, for them it will be a job. Practically, how who do we connect this job creation to? Can we connect it to the municipality, connect it to the province, connect it to the national department, so that at least, you know, it becomes official, these working guides are officially recognized, and that at least they can get something to enable them to earn a living out of that. I find it quite interesting. And also, you referred to the fact that South Africans should be encouraged to travel within the country as much as is possible. In other words, you are for domestic tourism, if I understand you well. Yes, we have referred to this point even here. We are also concerned about the question of encouraging domestic tourism in South Africa. We have talked a lot about it, but maybe we could get from you maybe some fresh ideas as to how exactly, you know, we can make this happen, you know. Encouraging South Africans, and I've always said, I'm sure the committee already knows what I'm going to say, encourage South Africans not just to visit relatives and stay with relatives, but to move around and see their beautiful country for what it is. How do we do that? What would you suggest, for instance, we do in order to ensure that we achieve that? I know there is a lot of domestic tourism that is happening, but I think still there is a need to have more South Africans traveling. And as you said, and I agree with that, that if, for instance, international tourism were, for instance, to reduce, but we would still have domestic tourism supporting the industry and producing jobs for our people. And the funding for research by educational institutions. I was just wondering whether, like yourself, for instance, whether tertiary institutions that research on tourism have any contact, for example, with the South African tourism, which gets the bulk of the budget of the department, and whether, for instance, they use you to do research for some of the information that they have. Now, to our researcher, our committee researcher, you mentioned right early in your presentation the question of the visa requirements. I was just wondering whether South Africa has got any countries where, for instance, the people of those countries find it difficult to enter South Africa. Do you have any examples of such countries? I'm asking this question because I thought that we are so friendly in South Africa, we allow almost everyone to come into our country. But if there are cases where, for instance, there are people who find it difficult to enter South Africa, I would be interested in that. And I was going to ask a question on the international events as to how many do you think we have, for instance, for 2011. But the doctor has told us that there's already 95 meetings that have been arranged. But if you have more examples of these international events, so that, you know, we can see how this area is contributing towards tourism. As for the extended public works program, I think we need to probe that as a committee. We have talked about this also quite a lot in this committee. But some of us just don't see, or maybe we don't understand, how tourism is contributing exactly to this area. In terms of the practicalities that you see on the ground, what are called the extended public works program, I often wonder where tourism comes in. And I think I'm also concerned when you say there has been an underspending in that area, 8% in one quarter, 21% only in one quarter. I think really this puts a big responsibility on us as a committee to check exactly how this funding is actually being used, because my understanding is that the Excellence Public Works Program is one of the areas which should produce a job, create jobs for our people. Never mind the fact that many of them, if not all of them, are actually very temporary. But at least just to know where this money goes to and how it is being used. And as for the heritage and cultural infrastructure, I think last week, you know, we had the department here talking to us about how for instance, they interact with other departments and how they interact with provinces and the municipalities. And if you remember, the duty went at length, for instance, talking about the provinces and how difficult it is, for instance, to get the provinces to accept that tourism is just as important as the other areas, and that the budget for them should be strengthened. So I think for me, for those areas, heritage and cultural infrastructure, the real responsibility lies with the provinces and it lies with the municipalities in terms of the budget for those activities. I think I'm all right, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, I think let us do this. Let us have a comfort break for 5 minutes and then come back. And then when we come back, the presenters respond to the questions and then we continue with other questions, starting with Umam Sgala. Please.
But the thing is, you know, I would have loved to get these people doing this presentation. Because, you know, ours is only over. But the actual action is with the department. Those are the people who have no feeling for what is going on outside.
They just don't take and see as soon as the
and land of the finance, it's going to make the thing even worse, because if the problem is not in the failure of government to have these facilities, but it is the failure of the department to implement what the government wants. That is the biggest problem. It's going to be a huge amorphous thing. I don't know the word of the Babas of that.
Lalela, I'll be a bit late. The lava,
Pockets that department.
and Mashala to be my salary to be in this about you.
Oh.
But now it's we need a quality control. Quality control. Quality control. Wakum to no lane. And also no reward no good.
I go go.
I have bad another man to you was that like it.
Let us get settled, please. let us then deal with the responses to the questions, and then take further questions. I think also, Dr. Ismail, the issue of the incentives for different stakeholders, entrepreneurs and business people normally are driven by profit, and the government has to provide incentives for them then to match them with profit, perhaps to see it as profitable, otherwise the character of the people of South Africa are not yet there, those that are creating jobs to want to create jobs for the sake of jobs. It's not good, it's not the best you can get, but quite often that is what drives them, that I create my enterprise because I want to make a living. Once I make a living, I want to make more profits for security and so forth. That is the one side. So now, that's where now the society now, those who are concerned with the welfare of all the other people, have got to come up as a government then and say, how do we make this one make a profit so that he or she creates us jobs? That type of relationship, which is a relationship that is there, not only in South Africa, but in many other countries. And then, which then creates a situation where there has to be interaction between all stakeholders, academics, businesses, government, leaders in different spheres, and so forth. And I think we've got to have more and more of those as a country, so there's ways to sensitize each other and then drive the country forward. So I just wanted to make that remark on partnerships, because also you find that in the tourism industry, people employ graduates from Zimbabwe and other African countries, or even from European countries, Italy, England, and so forth. The question then becomes, well, is something wrong with our graduates? How do we interact with FEDASA and these institutions as universities now, not only your university, but are we having this structure, or perhaps are we maturing towards that area? Because nations mature, I mean, we've got to be to take steps together, but it can't take us a few years to finish. But at the same time, as long as the direction is there, I think then everything will fit in as we go, move on as a country. So over to you, Dr. Ismail.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and answer as many of the questions that were posed. With regard to the first speaker, I didn't get your name. Krumbo. Thank you. You mentioned that I spoke about creating jobs, but it is on government level, education, and I also mentioned in my presentation that there is a need to call a conference of all the tourism stakeholders and see how they can propose ideas as to the idea of job creation. So I think that is also, in answer to your comment, there is definitely a need to have conferences or meetings with industry partners in industry role plays, and see the buy-in that they can provide jobs. Also, with regard to the question you had, whether I'm involved in business, yes, I am. I run a small business, but with a difference in the sense that I provide support service to the industry. To give you an idea, I compiled a tourism dictionary which is used or which can be used by UOTs, university technologies, your FET colleges, your high schools, etc. So that is the angle that I operate the business from. Also, I mentioned about the self-guided walking tours. I'm currently busy with that as well. To give you another idea, I'm also busy putting together what we call a tourism diary. And the idea behind that is to launch it at Indaba, for example. It will be a resource for any tourism role player. In other words, there will be information, statutory laws, the white paper, you know, that pertinent information. And the idea behind it is to educate people or people in the industry, who they can contact, their issues with labor, marketing, departments, tour operators. So that is the idea behind it. So I come from that angle. if there's anything else I didn't answer, you're welcome to just ask or pose the question again. Sure, okay. To the chair. All right, but then with regard to the second speaker, you mentioned about the brain drain. What I raised was a concern that I wouldn't like to see something like that happening. I mentioned about medical doctors that left the country a few years ago, all right? And I wouldn't like to see that happening. So our graduates need to be absorbed within the tourism industry. Okay. Then you asked the question, how many graduates have graduated? For CPUT, I don't have the figures offhand, but I can get hold of the statistics for you. And if you want to, I can email that to you as well. But you only want tourism graduates. Would I take it as tourism graduates? Fine. And then, so therefore, the other concern you had was how many people are actually leaving as a result of the brain drain. Well, like I say, in my opinion, there are no people leaving at this point in time where we can say there's exodus of tourism people with master's qualification that's leaving the country. Okay, it was just a concern that I raised. I wouldn't like to see that happening. Then your other question was, in terms of the curriculum, do we get input from industry? Was that the question? Do we get input, right? We have 4 meetings per year with industry role players that advise us on the curriculum, and we then make the necessary changes. But we are also guided by the Department of the Education. We cannot change the syllabus overnight. We're only allowed to change 10% of the content. So every year we change 10%. So, you know, as the head of department with the staff members, they will decide the information that will go into the new curriculum every year. So we do get input from industry people. The question you asked was, do we get any input from the Department of Tourism? Unfortunately, no. That is why I suggested that there should be some form of collaboration between tertiary institutions and the Department of Tourism. You mentioned something about marketing, the negative perceptions. You wanted me to give you more ideas as to how we can overcome the negative marketing perceptions. As I'm sitting here, I do not have the answer, but that is also an opportunity for our BTEC and MTEC students to undertake research in that regard and then to, you know, present their findings. Then you mentioned about the walking guides and site guides, who's going to be responsible for paying them. I believe we need to connect them to the tour operators, also to industry role players. And if you take, for example, a hotel, the hotel could have somebody there at the desk, and if the guests want to do a walking tour of the, you know, the CBD. They have somebody on standby that can take these people around. So, you know, it's an hourly rate or whatever the arrangement is, but it doesn't necessarily have to come from a government department. Okay, that's how I see it. But also the way I see it is that the people that are employed, all right, the idea is to upskill them and to encourage them to further their education. So they're starting off on that level, but they're not going to be a walking guide for life. And that is what you know what we need to do, to upskill their skills, their qualifications. So they will be working in the morning, in the evening they attend classes. Then the other question was, how do we get South Africans to travel locally? Again, more ideas that you wanted. There again, the opportunity for our BTEC and MTEC students to undertake that kind of research. Then you wanted to know if SA Tourism, you mentioned SA Tourism has got funding. We don't get any funding for research from SA Tourism. So what happens is the students that register for the M and BTECs, they get funding through the university and the funders. Okay. If you're saying that SA Tourism is providing money for conferencing, then that is not happening at CBUT. Okay. It could be happening at other institutions, I don't know.
Just a follow-up, a small follow-up on that last policy about SAT. The other thing I really want to know is whether SAT, that is South African Tourism, uses the tertiary institutions generally to do research for them. And if so, for me, I would ask the question, why not?
Again, firstly, SA Tourism, we don't do research for them in terms of the students doing the research. All right, we do have a research arm at the university, which is headed by Professor Camila Swart, and it's more to do with tendering for a research collaboration, and that is where it happens. But if I'm referring to students undertaking research, and SA Tourism, for example, funding that kind of research, or not necessarily funding the student, but having a conference, funding that conference so that students can attend the conference and then present their findings. You know, that is what I'm promoting. And then also, if you say why are we not getting the funding from SA Tourism, I think the one thing lacking is that we don't have that MOU or a collaboration or understanding between SA Tourism and ourselves. So we haven't knocked on their doors.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I just need to further clarify what Dr. Ismail is saying. The issue of South African tourism. I think we have spoken about it. The biggest problem is the budget, and their focus is marketing. They do have researchers that are under South African tourism, but to commission research outside as well, that as well will be costly. So I think at the current moment, they're only utilizing researchers within South African tourism. The issue of the visas, Honorable Manjob, I don't think it is that difficult to get into South Africa, but there are certain conditions that are set. Like, for instance, if you come into the country from the neighboring countries, I know you're only allowed 30 days. You can only come in for 30 days and then you go back. And I think when they're talking about relaxation of the visa requirements, is they're speaking about issues whereby a person can't come into the country for 30 days and then subsequent to that starts coming again.
So there are certain countries whereby the agreement that you can only come for 2 weeks, you can only come for a week. So, and the other thing that also needs to be looked at is what are those countries that are going to be targeted for the relaxation of those visa requirements, and what are the benefits of that as well. I don't know specifically the places whereby they're going to target. In terms of the events that are going to be hosted by South Africa in this year, there's a colloquium of African geology. There's the energy in Daba. There's the mobile banking for Southern Africa, a joint conference on international conference on human genetics. The COP17 is going to be in Durban this year. There's a number of them. The supersonic car that is going to Northern Cape, the Maluf Money Cup in the Northern Cape, the World Congress of the World Federation of the Deaf, the 8th Africa Economic Forum, the International Conference on Environment and Transport Infrastructure. Those are some of the few that I can mention now. And I think you also mentioned the issue of the heritage and cultural infrastructure, and you spoke about the intergovernmental relations that the department mentioned. The other thing is, depending on that particular structure or museum or whatsoever, on its significance, that determines which body of which government department is responsible for it. Like, for instance, the heritage sites. The World Heritage Sites are managed and maintained by SARA, which is South African Heritage Resource Agency. And we call provinces, you ask them about some of the maintenance of the structures, they tell you that they don't have jurisdiction over them. And so they cannot... So it also depends on who is responsible for what. So there's also a need for a clear definition who manages what, because that is not clearly defined as well. There are heritage sites that are managed by municipalities. There are monuments that are managed by municipalities, or are managed by province. Some are managed by government entities. So it's a bit of a dicey situation, which is why there needs to be alignment. People need to know who manages what. And I think that's just about it. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Pumbok, did you need a clarification somewhere?
Chair, I want to hold up the meeting. I just wanted to make a brief comment, is that all right?
No, let us allow the others.
Oh, sorry, okay, no, it wasn't the point of order. Yeah, that's fine, I'll wait.
Okay. No problem.
Chairperson, first of all, I would like to apologize for my late coming, joining the committee. During the State of the Nation address by the President, I was so excited when it was mentioned that the Department of Tourism is the industry which is contributing so much to the economy of this country. I am thrilled as I'm speaking. I felt so bengfunubize. So, Chairperson, it was so good. It was so exciting listening to the two of you telling us about this wonderful department. It's good that now it is a standalone. It is no more leaning against somebody. Now we can see things happening. We can hear things. We see that the industry is, the department is alive. It was mentioned that the tourism summit, of which I believe that it is important for us, more especially as members of this committee, to try and attend this summit even if it's not organized by the committee as such, but let's say in Gauteng, the province is having this summit, it is just for me just to join them, to sit with them, because I believe there can be a lot that one can learn, and you can ask, you can comment attending a summit which might take 2 to 3 days. Jefferson, I was just wondering all the time when it was mentioned that there should be a creation of jobs. Then I would say to myself, how do I, as just an ordinary Mrs. Zigalala, because now on the section of tourism, but today I've learned from the presentation that you create partnerships. It shouldn't be yourself alone, but create partnerships. But now I'm not very clear, how can I go about with that one, creating the partnership with, you know, other people. And I would like to know, and I'm worried, very worried, Professor, about the role that Kula, IDC and others play. Because really, to me, I'm not impressed. Messengers, I'm not really impressed about the contribution, about what Kula does when there is a request of funding by the small business people. I've seen quite a number of people, things do not just go the right way. And we've long been with this Kula. He's a so Kulilu Namazinyo Maj. Because it was Kula and something else, Chaperson. Nzinga. Yeah. And I don't know when Nzinga was buried. I would like to see the grave. Anyway, Kula remained. Today I've learned there's some IDC, of which I would like to know who is that one now. Really, I think, as far as I'm concerned, no one is happy about the performance done by Kula and the rest. Chairperson, it is a comment. My colleagues have said quite a number of things about the oversight that we had visiting Kailisha, Guguletu, Gwalanga. I would promote that we have these local oversights if we can, because we all know that when you speak of, you know, other, you know, SADC countries, funding is not there. But now, with the local ones, because as they say, charity begins at home, you must know more about what is happening in the Cape, what is happening in KwaZulu-Natal, in Gauteng, so. I remember, well, there's a lot that we learned. It was the time when one started to understand the department when it comes to jobs, small businesses. And tour guides, it's good. It was so interesting to learn that there are walking guides, side guides. Because now, we need to understand the role that is played by a tour guide. It can be a walking, it can be a side one. You know, at times, you find yourself being a group in a combi or in a car traveling, you know, to some areas, let's say, from Gauteng to Botswana. You are just a group. There is no tour guide among yourselves. You just see fence and trees and whatever. You don't even know where are we now. Then it comes to my mind that a tour guide is a very important person, very special when it comes to this department of ours, the Department of Tourism. Well, I wonder if things have improved after training, if how are they channeled? I'm not just clear. After training, how do you channel them? And one other thing, as Mamunjog was mentioning in our last presentation, Good was said about domestic tourism. But I have a suggestion, Chad, that we as members, we've got to contribute towards that one. How do we? More especially we, the women. The women, they create clubs, societies, quite a number of groups, you name them. From those groups, we need to promote tourism, domestic tourism. You just organize them. Let's go to Mpumalanga. Who has been? Let's go and see the God's Window, the what, the three, name them, Rondavels, whatever. You know, let's go to KZN. You move in that, except visiting Gwamalume. But now, through that, it can be possible that we can be proud on our own that we are, as members of this committee, promoting tourism. And some of the schools, some of us who have worked with some of the schools, you just visit the school, you tell them, these teachers, how about the outing? Because schools do go out, in fact. But at this point, it will be a matter of promoting this tourism of us. I'm happy to learn that there was a remark that how about the department doing something about children that have passed the university, what, but who are jobless. Maybe the tourism can try and assist on that score. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Whilst I appreciate the presentation by the two presenters, I wish it had been presented to the department as well, so that we are in a position to let the department hear what we say in reference or in respect of what has been delivered, and as well as enriching themselves, because in my opinion they seem to be very intransigent, and they are not really listening to what the industry demands and what the operators demand from government. I also am wondering what prompted the two presenters to come up with this presentation at this point in time. Maybe because they are in the sauna. The president, whilst mentioning that tourism should be part of the 6 priority areas where jobs could be created. Maybe it is because the address did not outline did not outline specifics as to exactly how growth in the tourism industry will be driven. I don't know what prompted them to come. Maybe it is because of that. But however, they are here now, and a lot of other people, and this committee has seen it fit that we have this presentation. I have got comments. Some have been covered, but I need to talk about finance. It is not only the skill, the lack of skill, that our operators in the tourism industry suffer from. They are suffering from the financial drought. Nobody seems to appreciate how a person with a business concept is envisaging the government, how government would be helping, because it, from the department's presentation, I think it was the last one, I got the impression that they think that finance is not really it. But my belief is that, you know, the institutions should have a working relationship or a memorandum of understanding in as to educating the government people on how the mindset of a business person is, because it doesn't appear as if they are listening at all. Also, it would be pertinent if people were to look and put themselves into the shoes of the operators. We have been informed that the finance arms, some of the finance arms of the government, are going to be put into one department. I personally see chaos there, because they have failed to operate positively towards the people in the industry, especially the SMMEs. How are they going to operate now when the department is the conglomerate of so many other finance departments? I see chaos there, because the hurdles that have been put in front of the business operator, SMME, are so vast that it is going to be totally impossible for them to access finance from this big conglomerate. I don't know what it is going to be called, but I foresee doom for the operators. I don't know where this concept came from of amalgamating this instead of rejuvenating and restructuring the means of access to finance in these small financial houses. In my mind, I believe that one of the problems is that there is lack of supervision. If a business person comes up with a business plan, the viability of that business plan in the first place, before money is put in or the borrower is given the money, there should be a thorough market research done on the said project, as well as looking at the ability of the person and the vision of the person, because business plans are cooked these days. It always is the lack of skill and so on. But the RFIs, which Kula mandated to handle the individual businesses, are not doing their work. Government people are very lazy. They don't want to get off their backside and go and assess these businesses. There was a method that was given to government, to DTI at some stage, as to how to get along with Kula. However, the president has pronounced on this, and I assume we are just talking, we are just blowing bubbles, because it has been said, and that is the way I assume it is going to go. I tend to agree, in fact I agree wholeheartedly with Honorable Krumbok, because when he mentioned something about cleanliness, our country is very dirty and our people don't bother about cleanliness. I think the more we instill the hygiene in our schools from primary school, like it was in our case during our school days. You could not be passing standard 6 without having gone through hygiene from primary school, basic washing of hands, let alone the littering. Those are the things that deter most of the tourists from coming to our country. Yes, in further and above their wrong perceptions about crime, which they have been proved have been unfounded, because when they came here, they couldn't find any criminal offenses or any criminal attacks on themselves. Maybe we were clubbing up and wearing our Sunday best uniforms or clothes, but crime here is no worse than at any other place, even right through the world. There's a lot of crime. Now I'm lost. Anyway, whilst I'm lost, let me give time to other people. I don't know where I wrote this other question. Thank you.
Let us then respond and then look at our time, at our watches now, so that we can adopt the minutes of the previous meeting as well. Over to you, Dr. Ismail.
All right, the question was creating partnerships. How do we create partnerships? Basically, the way I see it is that we need to identify our shortcomings, and then we try and find a partner who can enhance and guide us. And we then sign an MOU with the opposite party, and that is the kind of collaboration that will take place. The next question was, when we train tourist guiding students, how do we channel them into the system? At CPUT, tourist guiding is a subject which forms part of the national diploma. Now, the students will do it in the first and second year. To be registered as a tourist guide, you need to be 23 years of age. Now, our students, they'll be, if they start at 18, when they finish off with the tourist guide in the second year, they're 19 or 20, they still have another 3 years to go. So the condition is that they must achieve 75% plus in the first and second year, in the second year, in the term one and two. We then provide them with a motivation, which they then provide to the Department of Economic Development and Tourism, and then apply to become a tourist guide. So there's two things that happens. They study the course material as a tourist guide, but it doesn't mean that they will become a tourist guide. They can take it further if they want to, but otherwise they qualify with a national diploma. Then the other issue raised was we need to deliver this talk at the Department of Tourism. If I get the invitation, I'll be glad to do that. And then also a comment was made, what prompted me to be here today. Basically, I was invited to come and speak as an independent or outsider, my thoughts on the State of the Nation address. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I agree fully with the members when they raised the issue of IDC, Kula, and the APEC Fund. They haven't been assisting. And I'm optimistic. I'm about to just develop this optimism that the direction that the president has spoken on, they're trying to centralize the funding institutions, because previously, the Kula, for instance, would give money to intermediaries,
and those intermediaries, apart from not giving this funding to the people who are applying for it, those who get those that particular funding would be charged an extra amount as a loan. So those are the other difficulties with dealing with the intermediaries that are linked to Kulas and your IDC. And information about IDC is not readily available. It's something that is, you really have to search for it. And the measure of all this, I think it is also in line with the fact that they're moving the funding decision to the Department of Economic Development, I think the Ministry of Economic Development. So I think it is in line with that, and hopefully with the right strategies and implementation procedures, we would see a change in terms of funding of SMMEs. But honestly, there isn't anything. So we're hoping that this change would also bring about change as well. I think I'd also like to speak on the issue of tour guides. There's something that I left out. When we went to Khayelitsha, it was raised that there is exploitation of tour guides by established businesses. That is true. Established businesses, there isn't a standard for tour guides to be, how much they should be paid and what are the conditions. They come in a Hilton Ross bus, they deliver 200 tourists or 60 tourists, and they pay that particular guide 60 rand. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And that in itself doesn't allow for the environment to be conducive for job creation. Because if they want to pay 200 rand to one person, whereas they could have been paying, I mean, all those people who come in all those buses, they pay a whole lot of money for township experience. And also to comment on Honorable Krumbok's point of saying that there was irony between what people of the township are saying about not getting business vis-a-vis the reports of township tourism blooming. Those are also part of the things that contribute to that. I mean, the established businesses, they do have in their packages, when they market their businesses overseas, they say township tour. And I mean, that is not going to filter down to the B&Bs in the townships. It's something that people are going to come in, they're going to stay in Cape Town, they're going to be transported to township, brought back. So that in itself, it doesn't really come, the people in the townships can't really benefit from that. And that is the other point that needs to be looked at, because yes, township tourism is booming, but who are the beneficiaries of it? And yeah, I think that's just about it. Thank you.
Let us just stop there, and then I think there was a question that was supposed or a comment that Mr. Krumbok wanted to make. Did he leave it with you, ma'am? Okay. So let us, because of time, I mean, it was still interesting. We could go on and on, but now because of time, we can no longer go on. And for purposes of the information, I think we have learned a lot. I mean, a lot of information we know, but a lot of information also we learned as this committee. Thank you very much, Dr. Ismail and Ms. Doling. And I think also it puts us in a far better position for the summit. We know our facts, but they have not been arranged in a particular way that lends them to a thorough interrogation of the different distinct stakeholders. But in essence, the summit will be for all stakeholders to gain deeper insights into the industry, and then for us also to be in a better position to do oversight. We've got to understand how different stakeholders relate to each other, because tourism is about relationships. What promotes tourism is how different stakeholders react with each other and how they react with tourists as well. So as to enhance the experience of the tourists and make it even better and more attractive to even more people. So That was what we achieved, but we are growing in knowledge, we are growing, we are learning all the time, and we are going now to the summit and to interact with different stakeholders. I'm sure that the different players at the summit are going to keep networking, because also I think it should be easy for a head of department to make a phone call to the head of FEDASA, or to the head of tourism, to the head of other institutions. I think that will promote that to an extent, but there'll be too many people. But I think we'll have to then, according to the information we receive, to organize even smaller distinct interactions for purposes of interaction. The relevance of our syllabus at high school was put to question. We called the Department of Basic Education. We haven't interacted with the Department of Higher Education, and I understand that they are not going to be coming to the summit for one reason or the other, but I think they'll be losing a lot. Perhaps the further the engagements would be necessary with some of the people at the Department of Higher Learning. But everyone is going to benefit from that summit, and the Department of Tourism will be the first to make a presentation, and then there'll be this institution. What is it? Tourism, what is it? Tourism Business Council, that organization that does advocacy for tourism, that does research on different aspects on tourism, are going to present together. So the first will be department, second, and then we shall then engage them and ask questions. And then similarly, the issues of transport also will engage the department, and then there'll be private sector people engaging them, and then as part of discussions and so forth, on the first day we'll ask our questions, comments and so forth, and then on the second day then we'll have seminars where we'll have different short presentations for them developing a way forward. From our side, it will be public participation and also strengthening our oversight system abilities as we move forward. But hoping to see you, Dr. Ismail, at the summit, and then as we take our great country forward. It is all in the best interest of our country, firstly, and then of Africa. So we appreciate your efforts. But let us keep on improving all the time, all the time. We'll never be excellent, but let us keep improving as South Africans. It is going to get us nearer excellence. So there'll be people demanding excellence. Let us keep on demanding improvement. We'll get there ultimately. But thank you very much. Then we have the second item of our agenda, which I hope is going to be short. It is consideration of minutes of the previous. I hope that you had an opportunity of reading them. If perhaps it was not enough, let us postpone that item so that we approve the minutes when exactly we know. But I have read mine. But Mam Jong.
Yeah, Chairperson, I've read the minutes. Yeah, I just want to make a small comment. You see, when we meet whoever, the department or the public or the entities speaking to us, the program, as you know, is quite more or less similar in that we start with the presentation, then the discussions, which is usually in the form of questions and comments, and then the finalization. It seems as if to me, when we report in our minutes, particularly if it's the department, we should have, I don't know what you can call it, but an item, you know, like for instance, I see here we mentioned the consent of the members, that's fine. But now, we jump, and then we say, okay, I just forget the wording, but let's say the specific. What the committee agrees on, it was therefore agreed that. It seems to me between the consent and the agreement about what action to take, we should have, it may not necessarily be all in all cases, but at least sometimes I think it is important to record the response of the department or the response of the presenters, you see, to the consent of the members. Yeah, if we can put that on the record, the important ones, depending how the secretary will see them. Because, you see, to me, it's a bit dry to say there are the concerns, but then this is what you decided on. But what did the department say about our concerns? Because, you see, these minutes help us also sometimes if you want to prepare questions or you want to prepare your speeches or whatever about the responses that the department made to us, particularly the department, I must say, maybe even the entities as it were. I'm just suggesting, Chairperson, that in future we should see whether it is not necessary to put up that item, the response by the department, the response by the presenter, and so on and so forth, to our concern. Not in detail, not necessarily all of them, but I think the secretary can identify the most important ones.
I think that criticism is fair. And then I propose that we look at our notes further, and then in getting the response. And then sometimes it assists also to refer to the report from the PMG, because they issue detailed reports of different meetings. And then perhaps when we come back, we give a full note of minutes, except if the secretary has a different view. But we cannot have concerns which were responded to and then not reflect that. I think that's the thing. Or do you have anything to say, Secretary?
No, Chair. I just want to find out is the comment is that if Chair, you ask Dr. Ishmael a question, then he responded to that question. You want that question, you want that response, and then and so on. Is that what this committee? Before we said we want to see what was the question of the member, what was the answer, and then along the way last year we also said no, we must change that, we mustn't reflect the names of the members and so on. Now we're changing that again to another format again. I will have to check exactly whether is that what really the I'm not sure, Chair. I'm confused now. Completely confused.
No, I think let us correct the way the spirit now. It's, you know, it's not said in a bad spirit. It's not criticism in a bad way. It is saying that you come to a meeting, you have this perception of a department, this concern about the department. That concern is addressed in the meeting, and then now you do not say in your minutes that concern was addressed in this way. Therefore, it is not a full reflection of the meeting. So, for instance, saying that without quoting the names of the people, saying that the department responded on, for instance, I'm not having my copy of the notes. There were specific distinct responses for perhaps to. Uh, for instance, the issue of the unemployed graduates, the Department of Trade and Industry funding scheme. But there were sort of responses to this, and then in response, somewhere we say in response, the department said, then whether you break it down or you make one distinct proposal, one distinct, it doesn't make a matter. It doesn't matter because sometimes they do not answer these concerns. But for instance, on the unemployment of graduates, what are they doing? The same concern was put forward by Dr. Distinct Ishmael. The issue of finance schemes. Now, you remember that our position was that all these schemes should be under the Department of Tourism, because now the problem was that they were under the Department of Trade and Industry. And then they responded saying that it was very, very difficult for them to ask for these funds to be administered by them, although they got our point. I think that was the response they had. So they gave that response. Now here the issue is that it is as if they did not give the response. I think that is a fair input to our meeting. They responded, because if now we treat it as if they did not respond, it may be unfair to them.
Chairperson, I think you have covered me, because I would have also said, if you look at our minutes, this particular set of minutes, for instance, so much time has been given to what the department said to us, the address, you see, a whole page or a page and a half. But I think we've got that information in the presentation already, you see, so it can be summarized briefly. And then we can therefore also give a little more time, as I say, to the responses. And for me, the responses is what in future I would refer to. If, for instance, I had a question about a certain issue, then I would refer to my minister. By the way, what did the department say to this kind of question? What was the department's response to that kind of a comment? I'm not asking for the name to be brought back. No, I'm not changing that. We did say here that we don't want names to appear in our minutes. Even that response, it will not say to so-and-so's question, this is how the department responded, but it will give us how the department responded to the concerns of the committee. That's my point. But I think we have explained it, Chairperson. I don't want to belabor the point. It's just a question of sitting down and saying, how do we do it?
No, we'll sit down with the secretary, and then see how we take it further. For instance, there was criticism of the TEP as well, and then he requested that we give specific information about specific cases, so that they can take it further with the department. So it's those things that I think. There are responses to some of them, and then to some of them we said that we will take them further to the summit. So it's not something big. It's something that, but there are specific responses that were given that we just have to say to the committee's concerns. The DG responded. Then we need not elaborate or whatever, but say on the unemployment of graduates, this is what he said and so forth. If he did not have an answer, say he did not have an answer, that type of thing. I think that is a fair take from Mamu Jome. And then let us get a first opportunity, then we shall adopt. But it's just, if we go to our notes, we'll find those things. Was going together with the DPG of human development, human resource development. Was it? Was it a trache?
Yes.
So, I think let us just sit together and see how they responded and fill in. But I mean, there's a gap which we need to fill. But thank you very much, Manjole, and thanks for Secretary for the minutes. But we are going to take them further a bit, and then after which we shall then this thing. We shall then present to the committee once more, and then take the for purposes of record, because we've got to have a record of the position of the department on different things as well. Then let us go to the last item, which is closure. But before we close, thank you very much to everybody, and thanks for the participation. It will be nice. Only now 2 weeks before we have our summit, I think we shall have to circulate the latest draft on the summit. But the problem of the second day, because we expected to have 2 days, will be that the second day will be very, very short. But that's where the different inputs are going to be. There are different things. Three or four things: growth and development of tourism and transformation on tourism. So people will be making inputs there, and then we'll take it from there. But inputs from different stakeholders, besides responding and commenting on the first day, they'll be drawing up the responses and way forward on the second day, emanating from the main presentation that were made on the first day. But with those words, thank you very much for a good meeting. So.